following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios, Incorporated.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, welcome again to another edition from Radioland. You know, I just a moment ago, you know, of course, I'm here at the house in Studio A, and I had to move my car because the immigrant is going somewhere. And you know, you get that feeling sometimes. You know, when you you sit in the driveway and you put your key in the ignition, you turn the car on, and there's that funny little checklist that goes on in your head. You know, that do I have everything that I need? I'm only moving the car to the street, mind you, but it's just, I guess, because of habit, you kind of want to make sure you got everything. You know, I'm looking for the wallet. I'm looking for all, you know, my phone, you know, pocket knife, couple of bucks, whatever the case may be. And then there's that moment when you realize I'm only moving the car to the street. Or am I?
Perhaps I'm ready to just drive off, to just unass it, to just leave, to just go to some far-flung land. Especially when you look and you got, you know, hey, I got like, you know, 3/4 of a tank of gas. I can get pretty far before I have to fill up again. I could disappear. Would anybody notice? And then, of course, you back out of the driveway. You're going to move it. You're going to move the car to the street, and you're thinking, man, I could just put it into first gear right here, and away I would go. My future lies in front of me, and just vanish. But the question then comes to mind is, where would you go? Where is it that you would find yourself, and what would you do? You know, where are you thinking about going? Well, I could go to, I don't know, west. I could go east, because you're thinking in general terms now. You know, you're not thinking I could go to, I don't know, Denver, or I could go to St. Louis. It doesn't work like that. It's because you're not thinking along. You're just thinking, I want to go in this direction and see what I find. And the older we've all become, the more we realize we've been in all those directions, and there's really kind of nothing new per se. So what's the point? Why should I go somewhere? Where am I going to go? And more importantly, what am I going to do when I get there? Because I'm just going to be in the same situation, right? Or worse. Because now I've left everything behind. You know, I've left everything behind me now, and I've got, you know, a couple of bucks maybe for a night in a hotel, and then maybe a bite to eat and a beer. Then what?
Oh, I got to turn around and come home now.
And that's the feeling. That's the thing that occurs. It's this nagging thing. You know, my wife and I have had these conversations before. When things aren't going so well, you think, well, you know, maybe we ought to just go. Maybe we ought to just pack up some stuff and just leave everything else the way it is. We'll take the stuff we absolutely need. We'll load up the dogs and the cats, and we'll just go with some shirts and a pair of shorts, and that's it. We're gone. And then it's, where are we going to go, and what are we going to do when we get there? Because wherever it is that we go, we're not going to know anybody, and certainly nobody's going to know who we are, or worse, they're going to give a shit. So we're just running away from one set of problems and changing them into another. That's kind of how that works, and it's kind of sad, really. It's kind of pathetic. It makes your current situation worse when you think of it that way, really, because you're like, oh, well, this is kind of depressing. I'm better off staying here and fighting my fight than it is to run away from it all and go somewhere else, because now I'm worse off. I've got to start completely fresh. Now, look, there's nothing wrong with that. I've done that. I've actually done it. I've actually started afresh a couple of times. And that's, of course, that's how I wound up in Memphis. But this is one of these things. It's what do you do? And here I am in a position where I've got somewhat of a high-profile job. I'd like to think of it that way. There's a lot of people that listen to the radio station. There's a good number of you that have this podcast on you, and that's great. I appreciate all of that. Is it worth doing? to continue? Is it worth is it worth that fight? We've had this discussion before, you and I. We've often wondered what it, I have, at least. I've often wondered if it would be worth just shutting it down and going fishing, because it's not like there's a real heavy investment here on this part. Not per se, but that's just the way it goes. That's the thought process. Josh Thompson, who you've heard on the show before, he's been playing around with this thing called Periscope, which kind of got me kind of hooked onto it too. It's pretty slick. If you have a Twitter account, get the Periscope. Periscope is owned by Twitter, and what it does is it allows you to do like this live kind of a broadcast thing through your phone. And if say if I fire up my Periscope, if I turn the Periscope on, you'll see my picture, and you can chat, and I'll see the chat come up. You know, it's like little mini text messages that come up, and I can answer them. And I've toyed with the idea of perhaps doing that a time or two for a little while to see what it was. I played with it the other night just to kind of see how it works, and it's kind of cool because when I turn it on, it automatically sends a tweet out that says that I'm on Periscope, and if you tap on that on your phone or your tablet and you have the Periscope app, it'll open that up, and boom, there it is, and you could text along and see and hear what it is that I'm doing at the moment. And I was talking to a friend of mine about it, and I said, you know, it's just kind of cool. It's a new development in social media, and there are some channels in Periscope that are really quite popular, and it's interesting. It's a very bizarre form of art, I guess. And I kind of got chastised about it because it was like, dude, you're already on the radio 6 days a week. You got six shows that you do. And you got the podcast, and now you're talking about that. Is enough not enough? Well, it depends on how you look at it. Because if I do the Periscope thing, I might be exposing myself to a new audience, and they might be interested in what it is that I do, whether it's this, whether it's the live show, or shows, as the case may be. Maybe a quick live video tour of the studios. I don't know. I don't know if anybody would be all that interested in it, but you never know. That's just it. You might see something new. It's something different. You might meet somebody that's, I don't know, that might care, that might give a shit. Because that's the way it is in this business. In the entertainment world, you have to constantly expose yourself to new and different things. Unlike one of the Duggar kids. What the hell was Josh thinking, diddling his kids like that? Or his siblings? That's just messed up. There's so much wrong with all of that. But I'm not going to get into all that right now. I watched with some, I guess, bittersweet amusement the final show that David Letterman did. And I really saw how that era has come to a very, I guess, a strange and satisfying conclusion. You know, he was the last of the greats, the last of the real television talk show kind of cats. Well, you know, Jimmy Kimmel is still on. Yeah, I know that, but that's different. I mean, Jimmy's different. Both Jimmys are different. Conan, I think, is pretty good. I mean, doing what he does. You know, that whole vibe of the desk and the couch, you know. Johnny was the master of it. You know, when Johnny did it for 30 years, Dave did it for 33. 6,000 shows he did. That's an impressive run. And he's done. He's tired. He's ready to go. He's ready to hang it up and do something else. And, you know, I think it was wonderful the way he went out. His nice, you know, nice bow to the audience, and he thanked everybody but himself, and everybody else, of course, thanked him. It was a beautiful program, and like I said, an end of an interesting era. Because the new guys that are coming into play right now, And it, I don't think it's necessarily generational as it is that their styles are so different. I guess a lot of it is I'm just not used to it. I did watch a little bit of the new James Corden show, the Late Late Show with James Corden, that's also on CBS. Got to tell you, I was not all that impressed. And I know that following Dave's show, James was ready to, you know, really lay the gauntlet down and show the world what can be done, what he can do. And it was really kind of a lackluster performance. It was, I don't know, it could be the way that they produced the show. It just seemed a bit staged, a bit fake, and the bits went on way too long, just sort of beating the punchline to death. And it just wasn't my thing. And I don't know, there, obviously he appeals to some people or else he wouldn't have that job. Then again, I don't know how all that world works. You know, the bouncing around of Jay Leno and Conan and Dave and all of that big shakeup. Ooh, Lord. If you've never seen it, there's an interesting movie about that called The Late Shift. HBO put it out some time ago about the whole Carson Leno Letterman thing. And it's an interesting film. A lot of the guys that were close to it didn't necessarily agree with what the film portrayed. I personally think it's about as accurate as it's going to be. And it's I don't know, it's an interesting look at how all that situation really kind of transpired and what it was that made that such an interesting time there. And, you know, those shows have gone through such a production streamlining now that they try to be fast, they try to be slick, they're obviously appealing to to a different crowd than people like me or you or me that are in that demographic. I mean, they're actually going after the 18 to 34s. Just a hint, I'm not in that demo. but it's still broad enough of appeal that I understand most of it. And I'm not a big, huge fan of the type of humor that's in it. It just seems like it falls flat. There's some good jokes there, but I don't know. It's maybe the writers are just not really, I don't know, maybe they're phoning it in. Maybe they're just trying to do what they feel is best. But still, it's just not... not what I would consider, you know, stellar television. I don't know how it would be if I were to host a show like that. I certainly would do things a lot differently, but I would like to have some of the traditional aspects of it, though. You know, the ubiquitous microphone on that desk. I don't know if I would use a mic, though. I mean, I don't know if I would use a desk. A desk could be kind of groovy. I know it's part of the. It's almost like you have to have that. It's like you have to have the desk, and there has to be a microphone on it. Which, by the way, a pro tip. That microphone is not plugged into anything. It's just a prop. And they've all got them. And they're all very different looking microphones. The day after Letterman's show, the crews came into the Ed Sullivan Theater there. We're there in New York, where CBS owns. And they gutted it. Parts of the set were already in the dumpster. Everything was going. There were some fans that were hanging around that saw what was happening. And they were out there... taking bits and pieces, you know, souvenirs, which is kind of cool, really. But the desk, Dave's desk, is apparently headed to the Smithsonian. So that's kind of cool. And I think Johnny's is as well. And I think they should, you know, you're on the air for that long. And you've become that big of a personality, that success of a story that was. I think it should be. Immortalized in some capacity or another, and the Smithsonian is a perfect place for that kind of thing. So, you know, that's cool. I hope that goes well, because now the new guy is coming in, Stephen Colbert, and I don't know what format he's going to follow. I would assume it's going to be fairly close to what Dave had set out, which of course Dave's was a lot like the Tonight Show of Johnny Carson era, maybe a little different. It'll be interesting to see. I know a lot of people were kind of put out about Stephen Colbert getting that job as opposed to maybe Craig Ferguson. Craig, of course, right after the time that David announced his leaving, Craig basically announced his. It gives one pause to wonder whether or not he had put in for the Tonight or for the Late Show and didn't get it. And decided to just go ahead and pull the plug on his own career, because he did say, you know, Craig did say that he felt that 10 years was enough and he wanted to walk away from all of it. And I don't know that I buy that. I really don't. I think if anybody had gotten a job, gotten that job, they would want to hang on to it as long as they possibly could. It's a sweet gig. Can it be a grind? Sure, it can be, but it's a lot of fun. At least to me, it is. I would in this business, in show business, you take what you can get, and if you've got a show like that, and it's doing pretty well, which it was, and your audience kind of likes you, and you get a chance to move into a big chair that Dave had, you know, I think that's the thing to do. Had they given it to Craig, I don't think Craig would have quit. Shit, if I had been offered a job like that, I would do it till the day I dropped dead. That ain't happening. I'll drop dead, of course, but I don't know that I'll ever get a show like that. It'd be cool. It'd be awesome. I wouldn't turn it down. It'd be kind of fun, I have to admit, doing that all the time. Because it's and I know there's downsides. Every job has its downsides. I mean, you had to, one of the big beefs that I've heard with some of these cats was that you always had to follow what the man was saying. You know, if the corporate heads at CBS, they didn't want a particular bit, you couldn't do it, and you didn't get as much latitude as you thought. And you look at James Corden, and it's so being handheld, spoon-fed, babied type of show that it's like, oh, it's horrible. Because, you know, you got to let the corporate guys tell you what you want to watch. That's how that works. That's why all the networks and the television channels that are out there, and the cable companies specifically, they don't like this whole on-demand stuff, this whole smart TV thing. They're going to package you to death. And they do that because they want to control what you watch, because they have all of the horses in the race. They make money off of all the advertisement when it's a package deal like that. That's how that works. For good or ill, but that's really kind of what that is. That's why they're trying to become relevant again. These cable companies, these television networks, they're trying to maintain their grip on you because they don't want you to go somewhere else. They don't want you to have that on demand because they don't have that control. To this day, the Discovery networks don't really put anything up on their website as far as past programming. You couldn't watch another episode, or you couldn't watch a previous episode of Mythbusters, for example. At least I haven't been able to see that. You know, some channels are refusing to do this. It's going to kill them because that's where everybody is headed. This show is a prime example. This is an on-demand program. It wouldn't play well live, that's for sure. But then again, it might. But by having it on demand, it means that the viewer, the consumer of the program, which is you, have all the control. That's a good thing. That's good for the industry. That's what we've always wanted. An interesting side effect of smart television now we're starting to see, because, you know, smart TV is in its real infancy right now, and there's a lot of people that are on it. There's a lot of people that are digging it. You know, there's enough of a control sample, if you will, to see that what is really going on. Okay, you can actually kind of get a good vibe for what it is that is happening in the industry. One such thing that is occurring now is that reality television is not doing as well as it used to. And some are saying, well, that's because reality TV's played out. No, I think what's happening now is that when people are given the option to watch whatever it is that they want to watch when they want to watch it, they're not kicking on the Kardashians. Very interesting thought. You miss an episode of that, you're not missing squat. Whereas serial television of some sort, or an entertainment type based program that is like variety based, there are things that you want to watch in that. You want to catch that. And you don't get that with reality TV. And a lot of the people are like, well, oh, I don't want to have to watch that now. Because if that's the only option I've got, then I'm sort of stuck. But I can go over here and I can watch all this other stuff, and I can see these wonderful things that are happening and enjoy the types of personalities and stories that I like without all of that. Well, hey. And the next thing you know, the Kardashians are going, what? Well, they're already kind of like that anyway. And they got the kids, which is fascinating to me, because they've got the teenagers that are really watching this garbage.
And I use that term garbage because it's just, there's nothing redeeming about it. But as time goes on, these are people that don't even own televisions. So how are they getting those numbers? You know? So they're watching it through mom and dad's TV is kind of what it boils down to. So when mom and dad finally make the switch over to Roku or Amazon or Hulu or all of them, and they're getting away from the cable companies and their satellite providers, they're getting away from all of that, and everything is on demand except for a few maybe sports events or news events, which is kind of what that's going to have to be. News, weather, and sports will always be live. It has to be. You can't get around that. But whatever episode of CSI you want to watch is on demand, see? You watch it when you want to. You can catch up with Game of Thrones in a binge-watching session, which a lot of people do. That's a kind of a cool thing. But, oh, my God, hey, the Indianapolis 500 is on. I can watch that live. Or the Formula One of Monaco, which is all happening at the time that I'm recording this. You can watch that live. The Masters golf tournament is on. The Super Bowl. There's a baseball game. You want to catch it. You're watching it live. And there's so much of it out there that you can. You can actually sit down and do that. So, you know, having the ability to have those decisions is really kind of upsetting some of the people that are in the business, in the providing business. Because what are you going to do? You have to go with what the crowd wants. You've had control of the crowd long enough. For what we do at Radio Memphis, we're very sensitive to that. We've become sensitive to that. Yeah, we do have a lot of live programming because, well, there is something to be said for being caught up into the moment. And here's the thing that you don't get with live television, you can get it with live radio for sure, is the interaction between the audience and the show itself. You know, you can come into the chat room or you can send an email directly or however it is that you want to communicate with us, and you can, you're a part of the program. That can only happen in a live scenario. And that was the deal breaker for me when I built Radio Memphis, was that it had to be live. If it wasn't live, I wasn't going to do it. It wasn't going to be worth doing at all. So having said all of this, by offering on-demand content, ergo Radio Land, and some of the other things that we're working on right now, that helps because it allows you, the consumer, to kind of catch what you want to catch when you want to catch it. The radio station is playing music when there's, you know, most of the time. So it's there in the background. You passively consume our product. God, did that not sound fucking corporate? You passively consume our product. You're passively consuming it, which means that you're not actively taking part in it for the most part, is the conclusion I'm trying to make. However, when there is those things that you are actively wanting to be a part of, like on-demand programming, you actually seek that out and you get into it and there it is, and then you listen to it at your time. You know, From Radioland does not run on a schedule aside from a production schedule. It doesn't air at any particular time. You listen to it when you want to listen to it. I've got listeners that listen to it on Mondays. I got some that listen to it on Wednesdays. I got some that listen to it the day it comes out, which is on Sundays. You know, it doesn't really matter. Now, you can listen to it in the afternoon, the morning, the nighttime, the middle of the night, the middle of the morning. It doesn't really matter. There might be some of you that are on a commute that have a half hour to get to work every day, and they listen to it that way. A lot of people do that. There's some people that live in big cities that listen to us on the train or on the bus. Or those that drive long distances on vacation, and they'll save up a few episodes, and they'll binge listen. I get that, too. We've been around long enough to start seeing some of that, and that's kind of cool. We don't care how you listen to it. We care that you do. And we care that you like what you hear. That's the key. As long as you're putting out quality programming, it doesn't really matter. You know, the guys on Reddit, in the podcast subreddit, bitch, whine, and moan about how to get more listeners. And they're three episodes into their show. Hey, man. Hey, bro. How do you get more listeners, bro? Hey, first of all, speak like an adult. Throw some effort into your product. Put a well-produced show out there. Put some effort into it. And then you're talking. Then you can get some stuff done. That's a cool thing. You know, then people will tune in. They'll find you. It takes a long time for that to happen. You know, we're knocking on 70-something episodes. Here's the thing. I quit doing that whole season thing. I tried doing that, and it's just the counting of it. Just get in here, do it.
That's the key. Every week, new content. Keep it coming. You don't have to like this week or you don't like last week, but there might be something down the way. Because I like to put a lot of variety in the show. I got some interviews that are coming up down the way here that are going to be, that are already recorded, actually, that are going to be quite good. But that's just me talking to you about this. You know, I try and make you think a little bit, things like, you know, like late night television or what it is that we do. I started this whole thing talking about what would be nice to just get in the car and drive and turn it all off. Just disappear. Just disappear into the night. Would anybody notice? That's the question. I would like to think that my wife would wonder where the hell I was. Well, that's not like Rick. Where'd he go? He disappeared. Is he at the bar? Turn the phone off. Turn the radio off, turn the TV off, turn the car on, step on the accelerator, and just go. You're going to have to do that soon because here's the thing. Cars, they're getting to be driverless now here before. Google wants to eliminate you driving your own car in the next 5 years. I'm not really for that. I want to drive. I want to feel the rubber in the road. You know what I mean? I want to feel the power under my foot. I don't want to get in the car unless I'm really drunk and go, take me home. Unless that's the case. I want to be able to get in my car and be able to drive at my leisure or at my pace within the confines of the law, of course, and do what I want to do. It's like the cable companies. You will watch this. Now you got Google going to tell you, you will get in our car and you will go where we tell you to go, and you will not be driving. Because I'm going to be that guy in my little Google car going, God, can you not drive any faster, please? What am I going to do? I'm just going to sit here, read the paper? That's right, there is no paper. Oh, I can read my tablet and I get enough of that. I want to drive because that's what I want. I want to be able to roll the window down and feel the wind in my head. You know, the concept I can see is kind of cool. And there's probably going to be some goofy law in, I don't know, 15, 20 years where you get in trouble for turning the autopilot off on your car. Well, see, Google's car doesn't have a steering wheel on it, which is frightening enough. I don't know that I want to be in that thing to watch it drive around without that. There's no pedals. It's just a bench. It's two benches. They might as well be facing each other. Oh, man, I don't know that I can get on board this. I really don't. It's not like these things are, you know, I know they've driven them across the country, and they're very safe, I'm sure. But there again, I'm not trusting a computer to handle some of the decisions that have to be made behind the wheel of the car. Just like my cable company, I don't need to trust them. Oh, great, the Duggars got canceled. Ooh, boo-hoo. Now if we could just get rid of Duck Dynasty, everything would be so much better, right? Stupid show.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
Dirty D, you've heard her, Diana Fryer. We've done a couple of episodes with her. She's actually going to take over on this episode. And she had got into a fantastic conversation by phone with Mr. Michael Wagner.
Obviously, if you know, as a musician, if you stand in front of 20,000 people and you have to perform, you have to have a little bit of an ego. You have to have some self-security. And that is a good thing to have. And you also have to be a little bit crazy. But it's still, you have to pay for itself. And record labels now expect you to bring in a finished production, a finished project. And in other words, you have to go somewhere and spend some money and make that really good. And, you know, that is the hardest part. If you look at the business the way it is nowadays, it's completely different from what it was like in the 80s or something.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. You can subscribe to the show through iTunes, Player.fm, TuneIn, and Stitcher. You can also listen online and download past episodes at radio-memphis.com.
Goodness, kind of got worked up into a little bit of a froth there, didn't I? We live in a world of change. Everything is happening. The television thing is turning around. We got different people that are doing that now, and the whole late night thing. And because there is something, it is bittersweet to see this. And I don't really watch that much television, but there was something comforting about at the end of the night being able to watch shows like that. You know, that just let it wash over you. that comforting feeling of sitting there, and there was the guy behind the desk, and he's talking to some famous people that you may or may not even care about, but you got to kind of dip into that world for a moment. Wow, Tom Hanks is on. Let's see what he has to say. Ooh, there's a band on tonight. Let's, you know, and it was very comforting. It was very, very, very calming. It seemed like all was right with the world for that hour. And usually there'd be some good funny stuff in there with it as well. And who knows? I'm sure the genre will be around. It'll just change like everything else does. And it's not a bad thing. Change is good. That's what that is. Lord only knows. I can tell you this. From the time this show has started to now, there's been a lot of changes. And it may not seem that way to you. But from my position, from sitting here and doing all of these shows, I can see the difference. I can definitely see the difference. And it's actually kind of groovy, don't you think? All right, you heard what's coming up next time. I appreciate you being a part of it. If you like what you hear, please tell somebody. Share it. Tell them where you found it. Because we're found in a ton of places. Of course, in iTunes. Just search Rick Cheddar from Radioland in the iTunes. If you're in, if you've got an Android device, we got you covered too. We're in all sorts of directories. Go to your favorite podcast page and find us there. We're on TuneIn, Player.fm, Stitcher has us. So you can find us on all those places. You can always download it and save it to whatever device that you have. You can find it at our website at radio-memphis.com. And the written home of the site is my personal page. I've had it for years, and I still keep it posted there. That's rickcheddar.blogspot.com. You always find some pretty unique stuff there. Do me a favor, if you would, too, please, if you're not doing so already, follow me on Twitter. Rick Cheddar is where I'm at, R-I-C-C-H-E-T-T-E-R. Pretty simple, basic stuff. Follow me there, and if we get enough people that are interested in doing the Periscope thing, I might give it a go. We'll see what happens with that. What do you think, huh? 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 Pay attention over there? Maybe that'll work. So there you go. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios, Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more audio on demand, go to radio-memphis.com.